Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Hello, hello. You have Mac and Alana here with you once again. We're glad you're listening. Did you find us on Apple Podcasts? Or KMUN? Or did you turn the dial slowly on your radio?
So few radios still have dials.
I certainly don't have any.
But I have a pretty cool in my living room, a 1920s big giant stand-up, and thing still tunes unbelievable.
Well, good. Well, then you're listening on KMUN. Yeah. We love all of you, but you can find us and our podcasts on all of those sites as well, which is kind of cool. You can even send a podcast link via text, which has been nice and helpful when we like to share these with people. So just keep that in mind. Keep listening. And I have a word for the day.
All right.
Ready? You're going to like this one. Dingus.
Well.
And it's a noun.
Okay.
Person, place, or thing.
I should be checking these before because there is some historical use of that word that is very.
Not good.
Not the PG version. George Carlin. Could be using that word.
Well.
In another time period.
Alana Quila on Vintage Slang, a.k.a. this mom over here, says dingus. I'm not even going to keep going. So do you have any idea, or should I just say what it is?
I only know the one that I know it was used at, and I'm not going to say that on the air.
Well, it's a thing. It's a thing. So when you don't know the word, you say dingus. Also, synonyms are hootenanny, gizmo, whatchamacallit, thingamagummy, a whatnot, a doodad.
We did one of my favorite titles of an exhibit. We did, oh my gosh, like 20 years ago, and it was wacky things from our collection, and we called it thingamajigs, whatchamacallits, and who's a fats.
Oh, fun. So just like, so you could have called it dingus, you couldn't have done it.
I mean, anybody who reads a lot of like 1800s things.
Who does that?
There's more of us than you would think.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, moving on.
Wow.
Apparently Alana needs to be censored.
I should have the beep button going right now.
I have no idea.
I'm just very amused that you chose that word. All right. So we got a whole bunch of things coming out. Oh, my goodness.
Do it.
It's crazy. It's almost go time for crazy time.
Mark your calendar.
Yeah. So May, we got a bunch of things. But the big thing, Goonies tickets for Goonies weekend.
I get with a ticket?
All kinds of different things. You got to choose. It's a menu. We have a buffet of items to choose from.
I love Goonies buffet.
So just go to gooniesweekend.com.
Okay.
It's all there under events, and then you can get tickets for different things. Lots of different avenues to get involved. We also are going to need volunteers for it, so you can click there too.
Yeah.
Sponsorships, all kinds of things. If your business is doing something fun Goonies related, let us know. And as always, I need to point out, because some people are getting a little confused, the Oregon Film Museum, the Clatsop County Historical Society, is just the straw that is stirring this drink. And this drink is really big for everybody. But because it's a big deal and the Chamber of Commerce used to be the sole person doing the sole organization, and they're much bigger than the Clatsop County Historical Society, we needed help. So we've hired a company called Gillywagon that was involved in previous ones. They were the people that formed Gillywagon were part of the geocaching.
Oh,
so
fun.
Gillywagon is the Oregon Film Museum.
Got it.
Because we do get every time like we send something out, we get is this for real or is this a scam or something?
And they don't know.
So it is not. Gillywagon is working for us. They are housed up in Seattle, but they've got people all over. They're not a huge company, but they're big enough to help us do this, and they know Astoria well.
Good. Okay.
So GooniesWeekend.com if you want to get involved or buy tickets to something.
I love it.
Lots of fun things.
Yeah.
And
catch out the exhibit now at the Heritage Museum.
Yeah,
behind the set.
Quiet on the set.
Quiet on the set. Sorry, Dr. Chelsea Vaughn. Quiet on the set.
Quiet on set. Behind the scenes with the Goonies.
Goonies stuff. So it's extra. It's a bonus.
It's an extra bonus.
I love that.
The Oregon Film Museum. All right, but we also have fun and games. Old fashioned fun and games.
One of our favorites.
The, 54th year, I think. Oh. No, maybe like 24th. Fourth, May 23rd. Yeah.
Okay.
It's the first weekend in May, May 3rd and 4th in the afternoons until 4 o'clock, sponsored by our friends at Columbia Memorial Hospital Pediatrics. So it's a good time just to come out, do stuff, put the computer away, put the phone away, put the TV off, and come out and do stuff. It's all fun, and there's games. And
it's all fun and games.
Kids get prizes. There's all kinds of fun. It's all free.
And it's like potato sack races, and you have hula hoops, and
ice cream making.
Badminton. Yeah.
Croquet,
yes.
Yeah, there's all kinds of good things.
Yeah, lots of hands-on.
Pie eating contests.
Yes.
All kinds of prizes.
Okay.
All right, and then the weekend after that, May 10th, Saturday, is our Mother's Day tea and scones in the Flavel House in the afternoon.
I love that.
And your family has been a regular.
Yes. It's because it's another one of those things where
tea and plum pudding.
We do tea and plum pudding. Yeah, I was going to say, this, I would make my husband take my kids.
Yeah, that's right. It's your Mother's Day gift.
Exactly.
And then speaking of the Flavel House, docents, volunteers. Oh, yes. We desperately need some volunteers. We've had some people vacationing for the summer. And we've had some folks that have had to step away for medical reasons. But it's lots of fun. We train you. You meet people from all over the world. It's three-hour shifts. You can do once a week or you can do once a month.
And is it sitting and standing?
Sitting and standing. I always stand.
All abilities.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the word docent sort of intimidates me. But you give the information ahead of...
Volunteer greeter. And making sure that nobody destroys the house.
Oh, yes.
You are the keeper of the house, the watcher of the house, the ambassador.
Right. But you give people... So you know the frequently asked questions.
We know the top 10 questions.
Yes. You give them the answers, point them in the right direction.
And then honestly, the hardest thing for some people is the ability to say, I don't know.
Oh, okay. That's
funny. I mean, I still get at least once every couple of months a question I've never heard, and I have no idea what the answer is.
And then you say, and I'm the executive director here.
No, I say I'm volunteering today.
<You're>
I only admit that when I get called out.
Okay.
When I cannot lie.
Right.
If they box me in enough.
Yeah.
Like, well, then what do you do if you're volunteering?
The director at Astoria Museums gets an email about the volunteer.
Yes, how terrible he was. But just email us, call us if you got some time to spare and interested in meeting people. And it is fun because people want to be there and they have great questions and they have stories to share. And it's just it's a great place to be.
Any bonus or perks for being a volunteer?
We may take you on a secret behind the scenes tour of certain places.
Okay. When your friends and
family. And then we do a volunteer get-togethers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. I love that.
All right. Anything else we got to plug?
No. I think we're good.
Okay. Should we get to the big history highlights?
Of tomorrow. Let's do it. Okay.
All right. And nobody cares, but I have just returned from a trip to Sacramento to watch Major League Baseball being played in a minor league stadium.
Oh.
Yeah, because the Oakland A's are no longer in Oakland.
Oh, how
they're moving to Las Vegas, but 3 years from now. So they're playing their games in Sacramento, West Sacramento.
Oh, how fun. But that's a very nice stadium, I bet, right? Small.
It's small. 14,000 people.
So you're close.
And what I felt badly for, it was the New York Mets playing the Athletics. And there were probably more Mets fans at all three games that I went to.
Probably, yeah.
It was kind of sad. I felt badly for the Athletics. Aww.
Sorry.
But anyway.
You have no stadium and no fans.
Yeah. You got no home. You got no fans. Yeah,
sorry. So,
anyway.
But today is Easter.
Today's Easter.
But tomorrow, we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Yes. So my history highlights are for tomorrow, April 21st, 753 BC.
Wow.
I know.
Going back.
Rome was founded.
Oh. Okay.
Legend has it.
Legend.
Of course, legend says that Romulus and his twin brother Remus found Rome on the site where they were suckled by a she-wolf as orphaned infants. That all seems very plausible.
It does. It does. If it's, written down.
So I absolutely love this one. 1649, and listen to the words very carefully. 1649, Maryland Toleration Act is passed in the American colony, allowing freedom of worship for Christians, but sentencing to death anyone who rejected the divinity of Jesus.
Oh, Wow.
It's very tolerant of that.
Oh, man. As we cringe and laugh at the same time.
The irony, yeah. Yeah, that one just makes me laugh.
And freedom of religion still is, you know, such an easy topic.
Yes, it is.
And nowadays.
Well, thank goodness for the Maryland Toleration Act.
Right, yes.
1789, John Adams is sworn in as the first U.S. vice president 9 days before Washington.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. 1836, Texas militia routs the Mexicans in the Battle of San, and I'm never going to say this right, Jacinta, I think it is. Basically, Texas gets their freedom, so-called freedom
gets
from
Texas.
Yeah. Yes. 1878, First Lady Lucy Hayes begins the egg rolling contest on the White House lawn.
We're going to talk about that.
I bet we are.
Big tease. Stay tuned.
1878, New York installs the first firehouse pole.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. Isn't that fun?
That is fun.
And have you ever slid down a fire pole?
I've never. Which?
Well, you could go to the fire museum during the summer, Saturdays from noon to 3.
And you can slide
down. You can slide down. We only let you slide down the bottom part of it.
But okay.
You climb up some stairs, and then it's like a 5-foot drop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we put some padding for guys on the bottom.
But, okay.
Hopefully you just slide right down. 1895, the first movie projector demonstration in the U.S.
That. Yeah.
So Woodville Latham and his sons, Otway and Gray, demonstrate their Panopticon. I like the names that they had for these things back then. The first movie projector developed in the United States.
That's pretty cool.
So people might get confused because the Thomas Edison's kinetoscope had been around for a number of years.
Oh, okay.
But you could only view that like in a peep show thing, like a telescope, like you're putting your eyes into it and looking. Okay. This was actually, you could
project
like, have an audience. Yeah. Okay. So kind of a big deal. Also not the first, just the first in the U.S. Because, mm-hmm. of course, I think their names are the Lumieres over in Paris.
Okay.
Were really the ones that...
That did it first.
Did it first. Okay. But in America, in the United States.
Sure.
So, all right. I could go on for like 5 minutes on that, but probably shouldn't. 1918, German flying ace, the Red Baron, is killed in action. He was shot down by Snoopy. Are you old enough to know that reference?
Yes, I am.
The Baron, his name was Baron Manfred von Richthofen, and he shot down by Canadian pilot, supposedly Arthur Roy Brown.
Okay.
So way to go, Brown. Shooting down a Red Baron. 1954, a Senate subcommittee convenes a 2-day hearing on whether comic books cause juvenile delinquency. To avoid regulation, the industry launches the Comics Code Authority, whose seal of approval will adorn comic covers until 2011.
Okay, so I like this one.
Ah, did you do a deeper dive?
I did a deeper dive because I always like to know why we restrict information.
Yes.
And then how we go about doing it. Mm-hmm. And they sort of went about this in a way that was very roundabout, right? Mm-hmm. So the Senate subcommittee wanted to do something, but they didn't know how to do it. They didn't know how to govern this sort of piece. And comics were becoming more popular. They already were, but they were... branching out, as all forms of information do. So this association was created. It's called the Comic Code Authority. The CCA was formed in 1954. So 54, right? This is also a time when we're looking into how people are being influenced in their thoughts.
Yes.
And this was created by the Comic Magazine Association of America. Okay, so they're saying we're going to govern ourselves.
We will do it for you. You don't have to do it.
Yeah, so that you don't have to. And they enabled these comic publishers to self-regulate the content of comic books in the United States. Now, the code was voluntary since there was no law requiring its use, although a lot of advertisers and retailers did require it. Okay, mm-hmm. So the majority of comic books were having to do this. From the very beginning when this went into effect. So it was called the Comics Code. It lasted until the earliest 21st century, and it followed sort of this panic around these hearings and a publication of a psychologist who had said that comics were ruining the minds of our youth, mm-hmm. and they were going to sway these children and their moral authority. But what I think was very interesting that it was not until 2001, so that's 54, to 2001, and Marvel Comics, one of the largest ones, right, had the X-Force, and they required changes. The CCA rejected the comic and require changes. And Marvel just stopped submitting its comics. That's it. Nothing. They didn't publicize that. They didn't say anything. They just kind of quietly went around about and did that. And soon thereafter, within the next decade, so about 10 years, everyone stopped using it.
See, that's what I was going to say. And yet somehow it survives for 10 years when But see, in this time period too, even though Marvel's the biggest one everybody knows of, there's a huge growth of independent comics.
Yes.
As well.
Okay.
Kind of in rejection to Marvel.
Oh, okay. And then did they go and use that CCA?
That I don't know whether that 10 years of when Marvel stopped, if the others did or did not.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's kind of like the Tipper Gore hearings over music lyrics.
Yeah.
The music industry was like, nope, we'll just put little warning labels on. Yeah, will that keep you off our backs?
Yeah, this flow of information, I do find it interesting what moves or sways public opinion in restricting information versus keeping it from myself. Like, I don't listen to it. So we'll talk more about that, Mac.
All right. let's see, 1986, Geraldo Rivera opens Al Capone's vault on live TV and finds nothing.
Ooh.
Except for good ratings.
Dun, dun, dun. Speaking of uncensored opinions.
That's right. 2016, legendary musician and megawatt star Prince dies at the age of 57.
Yeah, it's very sad.
Our history highlight of the day.
And
I'm picking this one because I knew it might get a rise out of you.
Oh, another one.
Yeah.
I didn't see any others.
And right now, I would agree that perhaps this would be a questionable choice as the thing that had the most impact on history. But I'm going to predict from the future looking backwards.
You like to do this.
So 2019.
Okay.
Ukrainian comedian Zelensky, and I can't pronounce his first name, Volodymyr, wins the country's presidential election in a landslide.
Okay. Yeah.
I think history goes a very different way if it's not him that is the president of Ukraine.
Yeah. I mean, and knowing what we know now, right now, at least, at the very least, yes. I don't know anything about who else ran in that election, but obviously he is very, very different.
Yeah. And knowing how many things from history that I ignore when, you know, the battle in 179 or the battle in 50 BC between this city and that city. And okay, it certainly meant something to them then.
Right.
But does it mean anything to us today? Maybe 100 years from now, this whole Russia-Ukraine is going to be a meaningless thing that historian or students won't even learn about.
Yeah.
Or maybe it will have a larger impact.
Right.
Certainly right now, we see it and we feel it and we know it. But I think it does have lasting impact, this one.
And certainly, certainly him becoming president. We know that. So, okay. I'll go with you. I'll give you that over comic book censorship.
And yes, there's nothing else overly compelling.
Yes. Nope. That's a good one.
Although that Maryland, you know, the whole,
all the things we've learned from Maryland Tolerance Act. Okay. So we are moving on to Easter fun facts. So,
fun facts. Easter fun facts.
Since today is still Easter, these are things that you can think about. Easter is very religious. Speaking of religion, there are quite a bit of it, or almost all of it is from the Christianity. So there are other parts, though, of what has become Easter, right, or the way we think of Easter that it comes from elsewhere. So that's sort of what I was looking for when I was doing the deeper dive into this.
All right.
So just starting off the top, Easter baskets have special symbolism. The woven treat containers represent bird's nests and new life, especially when filled to the brim with eggs. Plus, they're a pretty utilitarian way to gather goodies on the Easter egg hunt.
All right. So there's a reason you probably eat ham for Easter dinner.
Oh, sure.
Historically, most early Easter celebrants would have eaten lamb for this special occasion since the holiday has its roots in Jewish Passover. But these days, many American Easter dinners now feature ham instead because of the timing of the holiday. Years ago, hams cured over the winter months would have been ready to serve in the early spring.
Interesting. Easter lilies are relatively new to the tradition. These beautiful blooms first originated in Japan and arrived in England in the late 18th century. The United States only caught on to the trend after World War I. The transition from dormant bulbs to delicate flowers brings to mind hope and rebirth, two of the important themes you see with the Easter celebration.
Easter eggs have medieval origins.
Yep, I like this.
Think Easter egg hunts are a strange tradition. Listen to this medieval game, children's game. A priest would give one of the choir boys a hard-boiled egg, and the boys would pass it amongst themselves until the clock struck midnight, when whoever was holding it got to eat it. We hope they at least got some salt and pepper to go with it. Okay, so you remember a story you used to have the big giant Easter egg hunt.
Okay, over, right. Oh, yes.
Like Tapiola Park. Mm-hmm. So when we first got here, we knew a couple of other families that we met fairly quickly, and one of the parents of one of those, we were listening to the strategizing before the Easter egg hunt.
Oh.
And we were horrified. You go ahead and you just elbow the other kids out of the way and go ahead and push if you need to. And I was stunned.
I've seen it. I just saw it recently. So there's this new thing of there's a golden egg in egg hunts. Have you heard about this?
No.
Like it's there's one special egg.
Okay.
So Carly even remembers it. Is there going to be a golden egg this year? Every time, I swear, every time we go to a hunt that has that, you will find the parents with the child and they'll split up looking for the golden egg. And it's like, no, it's not for you to find.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's also for ball.
Yeah.
Right? Or it's for an extra piece of candy.
Well, for that I'm gonna push a kid down.
Yeah.
So Donovan the first year, or my son Donovan, he didn't quite understand and he accidentally stomped on one of the real eggs.
Oh.
Yeah. Because they had a mix back
then. They did.
The hard boiled eggs and just the plastic eggs. And he found it incredibly funny. And because he was so far out, we couldn't immediately stop this action.
Oh, no.
He started just trying to stomp on all the eggs.
Oh, fun.
I think he got like three before we got his attention and told him that was not acceptable.
Like, Mom and Dad would never let me do this at home.
Yeah, he just thought it was incredibly funny.
I like this one. In old days, pretzels were associated with Easter. Why? Because the twists of this salty treat resemble the arms crossing in prayer. We say it's time to bring back this savory snack. I like that one.
Yeah, well, pretzels go with everything.
Sure.
All right, Easter clothes used to be considered good luck. Our old superstition held that if you wore new clothes on Easter, you would have good luck for the rest of the year. In fact, it was so widely believed that upper-class New Yorkers would literally strut their stuff coming out of attending Easter Mass at well-heeled Midtown churches. This tradition became the basis of the modern and decidedly less elitist Easter parade and Easter bonnet festival in New York.
Well, that's interesting. Kids don't wear the Easter bonnets as much anymore, right? I don't see them in the stores even.
We've got a lot in their collection of photographs of Astoria dressing for Easter
bonnets, right? Well, yeah, I remember wearing an Easter bonnet. Okay, so Easter eggs date back way before Easter. Again, with this is the medieval Europe, Christians may not have actually been the ones to start the tradition of giving eggs. It's a symbol of fertility and rebirth in many cultures around the world.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. The holiday was named after the Anglo-Saxon goddess Eostre.
Makes sense.
And I'm sure I did not pronounce that right. Scholars believe that Easter was named after a festival celebrating Eostre and the coming of spring. Her sacred symbols are thought to have been the hare and the egg, which is why they feature prominently in Easter symbolism today.
Makes sense.
Well, that and the fact that rabbits lay eggs.
Right.
Chocolate eggs.
Here's one. Eggs are dyed to represent the blood of Jesus Christ. This could be one of the reasons, which stems from the early Christians in Mesopotamia, but there isn't concrete evidence for reason behind that tradition. That is just one of the theories. Another legend has it that the rabbit would lay colorful eggs as gifts to children who were good. So kids would make nests in which the bunny could leave the eggs and even sometimes set out carrots in case they got hungry.
All right. Good Friday is recognized as a holiday in only 12 states. Occurring 2 days before Easter Sunday, Good Friday commemorates Jesus Christ's crucifixion, but it isn't a federal holiday. Only certain states officially observe it, including New Jersey, North Carolina, and Tennessee.
Yeah, interesting. In 2020, 77% of adults celebrated the holiday. Only about half of those chose to mark the occasion with a holiday meal, and a third decided to visit friends and family, according to the National Retail Federation.
See, I'd like to know, does that mean adults without kids?
Right. That's true. Okay. Yeah, probably.
Because we kind of like stopped once the kids were out of the house.
No special meal. No. Okay. Yeah. All right, we can thank Germany for the bunny. The idea of the Easter bunny delivering candy and eggs originated in Germany during the Middle Ages. With the first written mention of this tradition dating back to the 16th century, Dutch settlers in Pennsylvania brought the bunny to the United States in the 1700s, and the rest is history. One theory, according to Time, is that the symbol of the rabbit stems from the ancient pagan tradition on which many of our Easter traditions are based. The festival of Eostre, I can't say it like you said it,
just
like we mentioned, which honored the goddess of fertility in spring. The goddess's animal symbol was a rabbit, which has long traditionally stood for fertility due to their high reproduction rates. As for how the character of the Easter Bunny made its way to America, History.com reports that it was first introduced in the 1700s by German immigrants to Pennsylvania, who were reportedly brought over their tradition of egg-laying hare. Despite the prevalence of the bunny, it's not always a rabbit that brings Easter eggs in countries outside the U.S. Japan did adopt the American version of the Easter bunny. Australia, though, the spring holiday is greeted with a Easter bilby, an endangered rabbit-like marsupial native to that country. Other gift-bearing animals include the Easter cuckoo in Switzerland, and in some parts of Germany, the Easter fox or the Easter rooster. In Sweden, it's an Easter witch named something that I'm not even going to pronounce.
Påskharing.
Who hails from an ancient cultural tradition.
I don't like that one.
And in Russia, it's the dogs who lay the Easter eggs, not the bunnies.
Now, that's just crazy.
Yeah, that's weird.
I love Easter... the Frozen Bunny. Like, okay, that makes sense.
And the Easter witch, you think is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
So Easter and Halloween compete for the highest candy sales.
Oh, I believe it.
The two holidays go head to head for the most candy sales every year. In fact, some years people buy more candy the week before Easter than the week before Halloween. But that's because Halloween purchases are more spread out over the month leading up to the spooky night.
Yeah, I was going to say I knew that one for sure. Americans eat about 1.5 million peeps during Easter. That makes the colorful marshmallows the most popular non-chocolate Easter candy. The Bethlehem, Pennsylvania factory makes an impressive 5.5 million a day.
Mm-hmm. So in 1953, it took 27 hours to make one peep.
Oh my gosh.
And yet they continued.
Yeah.
That's back when they were still new to the world and were handmade with a pastry tube. But don't worry, it now takes just 6 minutes thanks to a unique machine called the Depositor that creates the unique and instantly recognizable shape. So how do we feel about peeps?
Oh, I hate them.
I do too.
Yeah, but Mark and the girls love them. They love all the flavors. They love that they're in different colors. Yep. They'll eat them. More than 1.5 million Cadbury cream eggs are made every day. Even more impressive is the Bourneville factory in Birmingham, England, which churns out 500 million every year. But you know what? I want to jump to this because we don't have access to those British Cadbury eggs. They're not allowed here.
Oh.
So Cadbury cream eggs sold in the UK are really different. They really are. The makers of the American product, any guess on which chocolate company that was?
I don't know.
Out of Pennsylvania.
Oh, Hershey.
Hershey's chocolate went to court over the British product because the maker of the Cadbury cream eggs in the U.S. made them differently. And so Hershey didn't want the two on the shelves. So Hershey won full-time custody of churning out the little eggs in the United States. The big difference is milk versus cream is what they start with.
Oh, the first chocolate ingredient. Itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So kind of interesting. So go enjoy those chocolate Cadbury eggs and just know that they're even better outside of here.
And they're better that they came from bunnies rather than dogs.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.